Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Welcome everyone to our seminar about the demons, more demons in Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes, and more anathas, the anathas they represent. We did part of this course a few years ago, I forget exactly when, but a few years ago here, and another places in Vrindavan, of course, in the VIHE. I've done it over a month on a number of occasions. So, how many of you, as a matter of interest, were here, participated in the seminar here a few years ago? Just a couple, a few. Okay, all right. Well, there are about 21 demons. Of course, some of them are not demons exactly, like, you know, Lord Indra in the Govardhan Leela, he's included. He represents an anatha. Lord Brahma, the Brahma Vimohana Leela, he's not really a demon. He's the head of our sampradaya. But anyway, you know, generally they are genuine demons. There's 21 of them. Each one of them represents a particular type of anatha. Like the first demon Krishna killed. Who was the first demon Krishna killed? Putana, yes. She represents the pseudo-guru, the false guru, who can either be a person who's a misleader, that sort of pseudo-guru, you know, the Sai Baba type. Of course, we're not allowed, we shouldn't mention names, but, you know, that sort of person. Yes, just give us, we're coming to that. So first was Putana, who represents the pseudo-guru, who's either a person who's an actual misleader, or the mind. And I don't think that so many of you really would get misled by someone like that gentleman who we mentioned. But the mind, oh, we can get misled by the mind, can't we? Do any of you ever have problems with your minds? One, two, three, four. A few of you. Well, I think we all know what that's about. Yeah, so that was Putana. But Putana we discussed the other time, and various others like Dhenukasura we also discussed. And I think Kaliya, if I remember correctly. So this time, we're going to try and go through the rest of them. 21 altogether. The other time, actually, frankly, I forget exactly how many we discussed, but I think it was something like 7 or 8 or so. So that means we've got 13 left. We'll see how we go through these 5 days. Maybe we won't be able to go through all of them, but those who we don't manage to go through, well, I guess come back next year and we'll finish them off, or Krishna will finish them off. Something like that. All right. So here we do have then some notes. It's actually just one sheet of paper which lists out not all 21, but the balance of 13 left over from the other time, who are still roaming on the loose around. Vrindavan or wherever, getting up to their nefarious activities. If any of you want a full list, well, you know, we can supply it. But these are the ones we're going to try and go through now. So why don't you, let's see, the men, you can distribute those amongst the men. Can you distribute those amongst the ladies? And if somehow we're short, which I suspect we will be, actually, I don't think we really have enough. So we'll calculate how many we're short, and we'll get them that many printed out for tomorrow. So if you happen not to get one now, then just look over your neighbor and we'll try and get some more sheets printed for tomorrow so everyone can have one. Right, so there's 13, and we mentioned at the top there that we've already discussed a number of them during this seminar. We'll talk about some of the following. If we have time, we'll discuss all of them. Let's just see how it goes. And I think what we'll do is we'll go through in order, starting with number one. So today, we'll talk about Shakata Sura, and we'll see how the time goes. We'll talk about Trinavarta also, assuming there's time. And, well, we'll just see how it goes, one after the other. Did everyone get a sheet, actually? So all the men got. Were there any left over? Not from the men. The ladies didn't all get, yeah? One. How many didn't get? One, two. Just two. All right. Anyway, whoever doesn't get, will get a few more copies for tomorrow. So now, the basic idea or the basic approach is that, of course, with every one of these, there's a pastime. With each demon, there's a pastime, and some of them are quite spectacular pastimes. They're all interesting, at least, and some of them are really quite, you know, really quite extraordinary. So our approach will be that we'll discuss, first of all, the pastime. The demon comes and Krishna kills them in some way or another like that. And then with each one, as you see here on the sheet, there is a particular anatha connected with the demon, which the demon represents. And even, you know, not in all cases actually, but in some or many cases, the demon in a very direct way represents the anatha in the way they are themselves, their personality, what they're like. Like, we're going to do Shakata Sura first. So Shakata Sura represents the tendency to carry the cartload of bad habits accumulated in this life and previous lives, and on that basis not be so inclined to surrender to Krishna. In other words, something like, I've got my bank balance, so I'll take shelter of my bank statement, and I don't need to worry about Krishna so much. So it's like that, basically. And you can see Shakata Sura, he's described in different ways. In the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada describes him as actually being the cart. If you're familiar with that pastime a bit, Prabhupada says he was actually the cart. Somehow he sort of transformed himself into that shape to try and trick Krishna and kill Krishna. In other places we read that he was on the cart. There's also some statement somewhere which I came across that he was like a ghost who was just hanging around the cart. Anyway, in the Bhagavatam, that's our main evidence, of course, Srimad Bhagavatam. So in the Bhagavatam, he's described clearly as being the cart. And the cart was carrying all these various things, and Krishna kicked the cart, and everything went all over the place. So like this, Shakatasura represents carrying a cartload of misconceptions, bad habits, attachments, and so on, from our previous material life. Wow, that was really quite a kick. And Prabhupada draws our attention to a comment made by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur right at that point. It's a very nice comment. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, "See, this proves Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because he says that when the Lord wanted to kill Nrsingadev, he had to assume the form of half man, half lion to kill Hiranyakashipu. When he wanted, as Vamana, when he wanted to penetrate the top of the universe, he had to extend his leg and he had to manifest this huge form and extend his leg all the way to the top of the universe. But in this case, as a little child, he just gave one kick and everything was smashed to pieces. So this proves that Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because he didn't have to exert himself as Krishna. He didn't have to assume some gigantic, amazing, powerful form. Just as little Krishna, he could do it. Yeah. So then, Mother Yashoda, everyone was busy there talking and so on after the festival. Suddenly they hear this tremendous crash. Everything's all over the place. This cart is smashed. And so they wondered, what happened? The children who had been there and saw it, they said, it was Krishna. But the parents couldn't accept it. They couldn't accept it. They thought it must have been some ghost, some sort of nasty being came, mystical being. But no, it wasn't. It was Krishna. So, like this, Mother Yashoda picked up Krishna, allowed him to suck her breast again. Immediately he was okay. And actually, this was taken. There were Brahmins chanting mantras also to somehow or other make the situation auspicious again. But the real sign that everything was auspicious again was that Krishna drank his mother's breast milk again and became pacified. This was the real sign that everything's okay. So like this, Shakatasura was killed, smashed to pieces in the form of this cart. And now we come to the anatha. So the anatha means to maintain misconceptions and carry loads from the past, remain attached to things from the past, and in this way not feel inspired so much to surrender to Krishna. So there are many stories, many different things. You know, all these things that we try to take shelter. You can imagine, like Ajamil, when Ajamil was dying, and he called out for Narayan, his son. So we don't know if Narayan came or not, but what do you think? How would Narayan, 5-year-old Narayan, have done against a whole team of Yamadutas? I don't think he would have done so well. But Ajamil was just bewildered. He was just bewildered, so he didn't know what to do. And certainly his son Narayan would not have been able to help. So there's one verse in the Bhagavatam, in the second canto, Dehapatya Kalatradishu Atma Sanyesh Vasatsvapi, to the effect that people try to make themselves secure in material life, but they're just surrounding themselves with fallible soldiers. You know, fallible soldiers means you may have a million of these people surrounding you with their weapons. They look pretty good, like they could defend you. But as soon as the enemy comes, flick, all 1 million of them are finished, just like that. You know how it is in the movies, right? James Bond, or whoever it is fighting against 20 adversaries. Arnold Schwarzenegger, or whatever his name is. There's 20 of them, 5 meters away from him, firing machine guns. They can't hit him. He fires one shot, bang, all 20 are dead. So, something like that. Fallible soldiers. They can't help you. So these things can't really help us, but we think they can help us, therefore we take shelter of them. But actually only Krishna can really help us. And Krishna likes to help his devotees. Krishna doesn't feel it to be a burden. If his devotees need help, he has to go and help. There's one very nice story. Prabhupada told the story, although it's a well-known story, of one devotee. Prabhupada calls him Arjuna Acharya. This Arjuna Acharya, he was very fond of Bhagavad Gita. He would read the whole book every day, the verses. He would read every day. But there was one verse he just couldn't accept. You know what that verse was? Chapter 9, verse 22. Ananyas chintayantumam ye jana paripasate tesham nitya biyuktanam yogik shemam vahamyaham. Very wonderful verse. Krishna says, for those who are always meditating, like ananyas, fixed, chintayanto mam, their minds are just fixed in an unbroken way on me, then for them, I preserve what they have and I carry to them what they lack. Yogik shemam vaham yaham. Vahami means to carry. Krishna says, I personally carry and deliver. So this devotee, Prabhupada's describing, this devotee Arjuna Acharya, he loved Bhagavad Gita. He would read the whole thing every day. But this verse, he couldn't accept. He thought, no. Vahami. Krishna says, I carry. He thought, no. It couldn't be like that Krishna, personally, he sees you need something, he goes and gets it, he carries it, he brings it, he delivers it, and then you get it. He thought that it couldn't be like this. Because Krishna's God. Why does he have to do things like that? He shouldn't have to do things like that. He's God. So, Arjuna Acharya, he thought, probably what happens is behind the scenes, Krishna causes it to happen. That the devotee needs something, Krishna knows, he is concerned, so he makes some arrangement. And through some agents, the devotee gets that thing. And, you know, it's sort of the same thing, but Krishna doesn't have to do it himself. So what he did, Arjunacharya, in those days they didn't have books. This was written on some sort of leaf or tree bark or something. He took a knife, he cut the word Vahami, I carry. He cut it out physically, removed it. And in its place he wrote Karomi. Karomi means I cause it to happen. So it sounds okay, sort of, poetically. Tesham nitya biyuktanam yogikshemam karomyam. So he thought, there, very good, this is right. We have edited Bhagavad Gita. So he thought this was very nice. Anyway, then it was lunchtime. He went out to beg lunch. They were very poor. So he went out to beg lunch. And his wife stayed at home and waited. After a little while, there was a knock on the door. She opened the door. And there at the door, there are these two boys. Young boys, maybe 10 years old or something. One boy, very dark-skinned. One boy, very light-skinned. And they had these, they had like a pole between their shoulders, and hanging from the pole was this basket full of food. Uncooked vegetables, fruit, grains, spices, dairy products. Just loads of this stuff. And the boy said, here, look, this is for you. We brought it. Take it. Cook a feast. And she was astonished. She said, but how? Why did you do this? How did you know? We needed food. And the boy said, oh, we met your husband down in the town. He was begging. So we told him, no problem. Look, here, we'll take all this. We'll take it to your house. So here we are. So she was really still just astonished. She said, well, thank you. Please come in. Come in, sit down, and relax. I'll cook a feast. And when my husband comes back, we'll all have the feast together. It'll be very nice. So the dark-skinned boy, he said, wait? You want me to wait for your husband? I'm not waiting for your husband. I'm going before he comes. And the wife was astonished. Why, what's the problem with my husband? Then he turned around. On his back, he showed some cuts on his back. He said, see? Your husband did this. There I was, offering to bring this food. He just turned around and did this to me. So I'm not waiting. I'm going. So they went. And the wife, she couldn't believe it. She didn't know what to think. So after a while, her husband came back, empty-handed. And he walked in, and there was his wife cooking a big feast with all these ingredients. So he asked, where did all this come from? Where did you get this? I wasn't able to beg anything. Where did this come from? And the wife said, you know, it was those boys. What boys? I don't remember any boys. Those two boys you met in the market, and they offered to bring all this food, but you hit that boy, the dark-skinned boy. You hit him on the back, What sort of person are you? But still he was so kind, they were so kind, they still brought all this food. So Arjun Acharya, he was bewildered. I didn't meet any boys. I would never hit anyone like that. I would never do such a thing. He was just bewildered completely. So, but then his eyes fell on that page of Bhagavad Gita, and he saw where he had physically cut that word Vahami out of Bhagavad Gita. And then he realized, wow, that was Krishna and Balaram. Just to prove that I personally do deliver things to my devotees, despite everything, they brought all this. So he became so inspired. He wrote Vahami back in the book. And then he went out into the town. He was just running around town, dancing and shouting, Vahami! 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 And no one could figure out what happened to Arjuna Acharya today. Yeah, so Krishna looks after his devotees. You know, that doesn't mean that householders should not look after themselves, you know, be responsible about themselves. But it certainly means we don't need to go out of our way to make some big thing about how we got to look after ourselves in material life to the point that our Krishna consciousness gets excluded or minimized, and we just end up sort of, you know, not chanting properly and not coming to the temple much and all that sort of thing. Yeah. So we should have that type of confidence, that type of faith in Krishna, that Krishna will look after us. And actually, in Bhagavad Gita, in the commentaries of the Acharyas, is a very nice comment by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He says that Arjuna at that point protests that, I think this devotee who Krishna is helping and carrying things for and preserving things for and doing so many things for, I think this devotee is showing a lack of love. If he really loved Krishna, he would serve him less and look after himself. But he is forcing, he's doing so much service, he's got no time. And Krishna is forced to look after him. So he's engaging Krishna in his service. So this is a display of a lack of love on the part of the devotee. He should do less and look after himself and not bother Krishna. Not bother you. So Krishna then replies to Arjuna. He says, actually, it's not a burden for me. I like it. I enjoy it. In fact, I enjoy it so much, I look for opportunities. I try to find ways where I can do things for my devotees. Meaningful things, nice things, to help my devotees. Then he gives a very interesting example. And in fact, in the purport, Prabhupada's purport to this verse, Prabhupada makes a reference to this example that Krishna, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Krishna gives. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Krishna says, just like a young boy who has a girlfriend. So he has some feeling for her, some affection is there. And he wants to express it. He likes to express it. And if he can't express it, he feels stifled and sort of restricted. So, he says that, Krishna says, one day they're walking in the country, they come to a river. They have to cross the river. The girl says, will you carry me across? So what does the boy say? Does he say, what? Me? Carry you across the river? But you're so heavy. You walk across the river like me. No, he's very happy. Oh yes, okay, I'll carry you. And he carries her. And he doesn't feel that it's a burden, it's a problem, it's something some discomfort at all. But rather he's very happy that he got the opportunity to do something like that. Interesting example which he chose to use. But it makes the point very nicely. Krishna enjoys it. He likes it. He's looking for opportunities to do things for his devotees. So we at least should try and have that faith that, you know, of course if we are brahmacharis and so on living in the temple, then we should have the faith that we can just absorb ourselves completely in devotional service and we don't need to have, you know, plan X so much in the background, that secret bank account, just in case there is no Krishna or something like that. And I find out and some parachute if the need arises to jump. We can just surrender to Krishna and serve Krishna and He'll look after us. Just like, you know, we've all been devotees sometime or trying to be devotees, right? Some of us for 20 years, 30 years or more, and isn't it? Many of you have been devotees 10 years or more. None of us have starved to death yet, have we? I don't think so. Starving to death on that basis, not really feeling any urgency to surrender to Krishna, or maybe not so much urgency. We'll surrender to some degree, but then beyond that point we don't bother because we've still got, you know, certain material things which we feel make us feel secure. So it's like that. And then others, Trinavarta, the whirlwind demon. He represents material scholarship in the sense that if we study so many material books and then we become blinded by that material knowledge. We can't see Krishna. We think he's a myth, some fictitious character, some fairy tale character. The Indian equivalent of, you know, Grimm's fairy tales or whatever it may be, like that. So in this way we become blinded to the real Krishna and he becomes just some Peter Pan character or something. So it's not like that at all, obviously. So therefore Trinavarta in that direct sense represents that anatta in that he came in the form of a whirlwind and he was blowing so much dust and sand and stuff that nobody could see anything. And particularly Mother Yashoda, she couldn't see her hand in front of her face and she couldn't see Krishna and she lost Krishna. Yeah, like that. So others it may be more indirect or, you know, not really quite so clear. But the idea is that they all represent, in one way or another, directly or indirectly, these different anathas. So first we talk about the pastime, and then we talk about the anatha a bit, and maybe get a little insight into ourselves and our situations in Krishna consciousness like that. Okay, so first we'll go on to Shakadasura. Well, first let me just mention an interesting point in terms of context. And Prabhupada makes this point in a purport in the 10th canto, that in the Bhagavatam there are so many demons described in the 10th canto, particularly in Vrindavan. There are these 21. But Prabhupada explains that actually demons, particularly when Krishna was herding the cows, demons would come every day. Every single day. You know, Krishna was there in Vrindavan for 11 years, approximately 11 years, and only 21 demons are described. That means only 2 demons a year. But it wasn't just a matter of 2 demons a year. This was a big thing. Every day, Prabhupada describes, every day, particularly when Krishna was herding the cows, every day a demon would come about now, about this time. Yeah, midday, just before lunch, thereabouts. So one demon would come every single day, and there'd be some spectacular battle. Somehow or other, Krishna would either punch him to death or throw him to death or kick him to death or strangle him or something. And the demon would die, and the cowherd boys would cheer and clap. And then they'd realize, oh, look, it's lunchtime. Prabhupada specifically makes this point, that it was a signal. It was the known signal. Just like, you know, some places if you're working, they have a bell or a siren or something, and it means it's lunchtime or it's tea break. So every day Krishna would kill a demon, everyone knew, lunchtime, lunch break. So they would take a lunch break, and that would be lots of fun also. Then they'd continue herding the cows, and then later on, maybe 4 or 5 o'clock, something like that, later afternoon, another demon would come. And again, another battle. And another dead demon. And lots of cheering. You know, the cowherd boys, they're really tough boys. You can imagine they'd have to be, wouldn't you? You know, there's a dead body. Some dead body there. But they're all cheering. Yes, great, very good. So they're tough little guys. So more cheering and congratulating Krishna. And then they'd look at their watches. Well, I don't know if they'd look at their watches, but then they would just know. Time to go home. So then they'd go home to their mothers. And Prabhupada describes that. This was a specific arrangement by Yogamaya. Because the boys, they were just so absorbed in playing with Krishna, just totally captivated, that if there wasn't something like at this time to interrupt their playing, they would have just kept playing and they wouldn't have taken lunch. And in the later afternoon, if there wasn't, again, something to really interrupt their playing, and, you know, in quite a dramatic way, they would never have gone home. They would just have continued playing because it was so much fun. And, you know, there's so many stories, of course, but there's one story when Mother Yashoda is feeling so much separation from Krishna as Krishna is leaving in the morning. Actually, it's a bit of a long story, but basically, in this regard, what happens, Mother Yashoda is feeling so much separation, she tells Krishna and Balaram, I'm coming too. And they say, Mata, you can't come. We're going to herd the cows. And she says, I know how to herd the cows. I've done this before. So I'm going to come. And I'll cook lunch out there. So it goes back and forth. Balaram actually is arguing with Mother Yashoda that, you know, you can't come. But she's saying, yeah, I can come. I'll herd the cows. No, you can't come. You're too old. I'll cook lunch. No, you can't come. Finally, Balaram says, look, we don't actually herd the cows. We just play. The cows just follow us because they're inseparable from Krishna. So look, you really are too old. You can't play these games we play. Wrestling. Who's going to wrestle with you? So you can't come. So then Mother Yashoda becomes very disappointed and she stays home. So yes, it was like that. They're having so much fun playing that they weren't even really herding the cows. It's just the cows would follow them wherever they went, because they would always follow Krishna. So if these demons didn't come to just punctuate and interrupt the playing, they would never have had lunch. They would never have gone home. And as far as they were concerned, it would have been fine. But it wouldn't have been fine for Mother Yashoda and the others. So therefore, these 21, they're the most significant out of a much greater number. And even some days, there were three. Yes. Some days, the boys went out early and not only took lunch with them, they took breakfast with them in their little boxes. And a demon would come early. Yeah. So some days there was a breakfast demon also. So like this. Anyway, there's a very nice little quote here from Prabhupada, from one purport, in this chapter actually, the chapter dealing with Shakata Sura. And this is just something to keep in the back of our minds, what it's all about. Prabhupada says, these narrations are wonderfully enjoyable. And those who are fortunate are struck with wonder upon hearing of these extraordinary activities of the Lord. Although the less intelligent regard them as mythological because a dull brain cannot understand them, still they are real facts. These narrations are actually so enjoyable and enlightening that Maharaj Parikshit and Shukadev Goswami took pleasure in them, and other liberated persons following in their footsteps become fully enlightened by hearing about the wonderful activities of the Lord. So this is, in other words, this is all nectar. This is all nectar. And if we really do give our hearing capacity and give our attention nicely, then we'll experience it as nectar. If, you know, if we're thinking, wow, lunch, and this is my third class, my God, fourth class, including the Bhagavatam. When's it going to finish? What's lunch going to be? Anyway, Hare Krishna, we don't want to deviate anyone. But if we get sidetracked, you know, there's a famous benediction, I don't know if you've heard about it, but at the beginning of creation, Nidra Devi, the goddess, demigoddess of sleep, she complained to Lord Vishnu that, I have my service, I put everyone to sleep, but there's a problem with your devotees. They never sleep, or they don't sleep enough. So I feel very unfulfilled because I can't do my service with your devotees. So you please do something so I can do my service with your devotees. So Lord Vishnu thought momentarily. Then he said, all right, if when my pastimes and my kata is going on, if my devotees are not being attentive, then you can do your service. So watch out. Yeah, it's like that. But actually it's nectar. It's just nectar. Of course, we are materially conditioned, so, you know, we're trying to come through to that platform where it's always nectar. I think we experience it more like sometimes it's nectar. So let's try and give our attention. Right, so Shakatasura. This happens immediately after, or, well, immediately quite shortly after Putana. Krishna is just trying to crawl. Just. Not very successfully. He's sort of at that stage where he lies there and he kind of, you know, turns over a bit and something tries to sort of push himself up a bit and collapses back down. You know, maybe crawls a little bit. Like this. Actually, there's one interesting pastime which is not part of this, and I don't know if you've heard it or not, but how Radha and Krishna first met. You familiar with that? Radha and Krishna first met? Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, right at this time, took Krishna over to Maharaj Vrishabhanu and Mother Kirtido's place. They were friends, or, you know, very, quite closely connected. So, they took Krishna, he was sort of crawling, but not really quite, and they went over because they also wanted to see Radharani. They knew that Maharaj Vrishabhanu and Kirtida had also had a child, because that's a long story, how Radharani came to them. But anyway, they had a child, so they wanted to, you know, everyone to see the new babies. So they went over and they were talking away. They put Krishna down. He was lying there. Radharani was in her cradle right next to Krishna, and Krishna sort of lying there as babies do and trying this way and that to maneuver a bit in a rather sort of clumsy way. And the parents are talking and chatting. And Radharani, she appeared blind. Not actually blind, but her eyes were closed and they couldn't be opened. So Krishna then lying next to her, she's in the cradle, he's sort of on the ground, something like that. He sort of dragged himself over and climbed up on the side of the cradle and looked in. And what did he see? There's Radharani. And just at that second, Radharani's eyes opened and she saw there's Krishna looking in over the top of the cradle. So Krishna was the first thing, person that Radharani saw. And she never saw anything other than Krishna. That's Radharani. So it was around this time that Shakatasura came. So around this time, there is, according to the Vedic culture, there are different ceremonies and different functions at different points in a person's life. You know, there's the hair-cutting ceremony, name-giving, first grains, and so on and so on and so on. Some of them are, you know, like official samskars. Others are just, you know, they're just memorable turning points in the person's life. So there's some sort of, in the case of the cowherd people, Prabhupada calls them Gopajati, They're like family customs. So there is a festival, a little occasion, when the child is beginning to crawl. First of all, the child is just, you know, can't really do anything. Then the child begins trying to crawl. Then the child begins trying to walk. So there are little ceremonies at each point. Very nice. And people are called over, and it's a whole thing. Celebration. So this particular one is called Uttan. Uttan, which Prabhupada says, it's performed when a child is due to leave the house for the first time. And it was performed in Krishna's case when he was 3 months. He had just killed Putana, that was also when he was 3 months. So maybe some days later, just starting to crawl, and in this way, leave the house. So, they called everyone. It was a whole big thing. Everyone came. All the relatives, the whole village, the whole community. And they had priests chanting mantras and, oh, just a very jolly, happy occasion. So, they bathed Krishna. There's a picture, actually. It's from that same whole program on that day. You may have seen, you may be familiar with that picture of Krishna. There's the ladies around and a raised platform. And Krishna is in a sort of a bowl or something. And they're pouring milk on him. Yeah. So they did an Abhishek. Yeah. This was the standard on that day. So it was a whole big thing going on. And after the bathing, when basically everything was over, people were taking prasadam and so on. So Mother Yashoda was dealing with the people, speaking to the people, thanking them for coming and reciprocating, carrying Krishna around. But it became a little inconvenient. Krishna actually fell asleep in her arms. So she put Krishna down in a safe place under this cart. Seemed like a safe place. People wouldn't possibly trip over him. He wouldn't get in the way. So she put him down and left him there. He was sleeping. It seemed okay. But then Krishna woke up, and what did he want? He wanted to be breastfed, but Mother Yashoda had gone. And you know what Krishna gets like when he wants to be breastfed, but it's not working out. Well, maybe tomorrow we'll talk about the Damodar Leela. Boy, Krishna really doesn't like that. So Krishna just got so disturbed. He started crying, and he can't really do much because he's just beginning to crawl. He can't really crawl. He's lying there on his back, basically sort of flapping, you know, waving his arms and legs and making a whole scene there and kicking. And he kicked the cart. And the cart, one kick, the cart was smashed to pieces. The whole thing disintegrated. The wheels fell off. The axles were broken. The body of the cart was just like a big problem in ISKCON. None of us are homeless, are we? I don't think so. None of us are without clothes and, you know, like that. Yeah, so Krishna will look after us. And then, of course, in the case of householders who are living in their own place and so on, they have the responsibility to look after themselves, but that doesn't mean they now need to make some big effort. You know, a multitude of insurance policies, a second car just in case the first one breaks down, a second house in case the first one burns down or something. You know what I mean? We don't need, even as householders, devotees don't need to go overboard. Of course, they have to use their discrimination to understand where necessity ends and excess begins. But we should try and do like that and not carry these loads and be overly attached. And carry these things, actually, as Shona Gurishi Prabhu said today very nicely, sometimes we're coming into Krishna consciousness, we try and carry as much through as we can. It's a relatively smaller doorway materially into Krishna consciousness, but we may try and squeeze as much through as possible. But really, we don't need to worry about it too much. Krishna will look after his devotees. Okay, so time is up. Time is up, and we only discussed Shakadasura. So we'll carry on from this point tomorrow. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Mashi Juba is not all.